inside of the shirt.
I'm going to call the meeting to call the meeting to order, please. This is the Community Services Committee meeting. I'll call the roll. Who's president at this point in time is President Bullock, Kilpatrick, Sheldon, Packett, Street, Smalley, Weiner, Cartier, Co-Chair Diller, and Councilman Retta. This is Manager Raina Kai-Triller and Penelope Hollis. First order of business is approval of the minutes from the January 22nd meeting.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Moving on with the agenda for this afternoon's meeting, we have with us the General Manager of Community Services, Alan Matus. The first item on today's agenda would be the fiscal year 2014 federal grant proposal process review. Alan, if you join us, please.
Yep.
Good afternoon, everyone.
You can have a seat at the end of the table if you like, but if you prefer to stand.
I think the big news today is the upcoming March 1st cuts. And I think it's important that we talk about this and the impact it's going to have on our operation in Section 8, which is where we're probably going to see the hit first. Preliminary indication is that there's going to be a reduction in our funding levels. Bottom line, we don't think we're losing any vouchers, but it is a time that we are very conscious of what we're going to have to do to maintain what we have. We realize there's about $1 million loss that we're going to take a hit right off the top. This means that either we address it through the loss of tenants not utilizing their vouchers or giving up their vouchers to offset the hit that we're taking on Friday. We think basically we can do this. We have a slight reserve that we can apply to absorb some of the shock, but quite honestly, it's going to take some really serious accounting on our part to maintain what we have. We're also taking a hit administratively for every dollar we're supposed to get. We're only getting 64 cents, which means that there's positions we have available and funded that we're going to have to not fill. This will be where we'll absorb the loss. So basically, like everyone else, we're going to have to do more with less. But we think if we're very conscious about our program, keeping an eye on it on a monthly basis with our accounting people, we'll at best be able to maintain what we have right now. And once again, I have no idea what's happening in Washington. The percentage of cuts, I think the carry was 5.1 was a projection. We anticipated 5%, so the shock is not a great one. We already have it built into the budget, so we know pretty much where we are and what we can do. We do think we can deliver the services that we've been delivering, but once again, you know, we're going to have to a little bit rob Peter to pay Paul to keep this thing going. It's just, you know, we're at the mercy of, you know, the federal government. These are preliminary. We really have no idea exactly what's going to happen. This is the latest news we got from HUD and from NARA, who's our lobbyist down there, you know, to see what's going on. It's still basically a guess, but we're a little more sure on the Section 8. That is the big one right now.
Alan, if I may ask you for some clarity, I think you mentioned that some of the Section 8 tenants or clients were giving up their vouchers.
Every once in a while, someone will pass. Someone, you know, on the bright side, income goes up. They don't need them any longer. If we get one back, we just have to refrain from filling.
Oh, I see. So if you get them back, you're not going to go to the waiting list at all. So what is the strategy going forward?
What we're doing, it's almost like zero-based budgeting, that we know an individual will generate that much expense per month, and we know how many we have to absorb in a loss in order to maintain the ones that are currently occupying houses. Once we get above that, we can start putting the vouchers back out on the street, but we have to be aware of what our loss is going to be. If we were just to go ahead and say, oh, we're filling all these, then people who have been living in houses aren't going to have vouchers. Now, we do have some reserves that we can apply to that to take the sting off. But, you know, it's once it's gone, it's gone.
Right.
And it's just, you know, unfortunately, it's a function of Washington. We have no control, no input. We can't go down there and tell them what to do. John?
Of course. Right. Councilman Cartier.
When do you actually know, in terms of the actual magnitude of the cuts? Is this a fiscal year?
Friday.
Then I think the 27th is.
Yes. Carrie Casey with Community Services. Section 8, as you know, operates on a calendar year. So by March 1st, we should pretty much be able to project our calendar year budget that we're currently operating under. And, you know, really, with Alan's leadership, we have not done anything in terms of waiting list activity or absorbing any of our clients that have moved into the county because we were worried about this scenario. So as Alan said, we'll know with pretty much certainty. And Friday, as Alan's updating council, this is as new as we have it. We actually received some preliminary guidance from HUD, which is the first we've heard from HUD at all about this.
Yes, true.
And what kind of you know, impact we were going to be hit with. And that's, you know, what we really wanted to, you know, Alan wanted to bring to council was this is the first time our housing subsidies have been cut. We've been hit hard with operations, but never our rental payments. And to be able to keep, you know, as our goal is to keep every one house that we currently have housed, it's going to be a real zero-sum game for the rest of the year. And, you know, as Alan said, for CDBG, home, and ESG, we've already, you know, projected the 5% cut. But I don't think, you know, March 27th is when they have to have some sort of frame for next year, which could mean, you know, we still don't know. Does that mean additional cuts? That means that, you know, we're still watching.
Yeah, that's the date when they kicked this can down the road. That was the date they kicked it to, March 27th. So they have to come up with something by then to make this. You know, word down there was a continuing resolution, which we were happy with because that keeps us funded to where we are. But if they actually don't do anything or sit back and start addressing this, it's not going to be good. We have like 720 people on a waiting list. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, we're now also actively looking to make sure everyone is. We're working with the police to make sure you aren't abusing your rights as a tenant. You know, we're doing everything we possibly can. I have a whole bunch of good people who need housing. Through no fault of their own, this is an economic situation, and they need all the help they can get. And we will do everything in our power to do it, but it is not an easy task.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
How many do you have in homes now? If you have 720 on a waiting list, how many are you working with that are within homes?
We're authorized for 1,824 vouchers. Okay. We're currently at about 1,800. So we will not be able to, it'll slowly, as Alan said, we have attrition every month of about, we project about 13 clients a month, either move or, you know, hopefully, transcend their situation and are no longer need Section 8. Mm-hmm. So we will be slowly chipping away at that 1,800 because to meet our budget authority, we're going to have to be way below 1,800. We're talking 1,720, 1,730 authorized. I mean, to be able to meet our budget.
Right, right.
When you're talking the impact that Alan mentioned of 1 to 1.5 million. You know, we're still trying to collect, you know, the actual data, but we're at our highest point at this very moment, you know, because we won't be able to do any more activity until.
And what we're doing, certainly, you know, we'll report to council on this. We're going to meet financially every month, see where we are, see how many people are off, to keep projecting the budget and tweaking it as we move forward. It's that tight right now that we'll be having monthly finance meetings to see what direction we're taking. And once again, this whole thing can go upside down March 2nd. We don't know. This is the best we have.
Councilman Street.
Can you clarify, because I really didn't understand what you're saying in terms of police and abusing your rights?
No. Mr. Jones has a voucher. Mr. Jones commits a felony. Mr. Jones, you know, is no longer a tenant if he's convicted of a felony.
So, So what kind of interaction and pattern with police do we have now?
We have none right now. We're looking down the road that if a tenant is convicted of a felony or commits a felony.
Okay, is it commit or convict?
We're looking at convict. HUD says, HUD actually says, if you go ahead and there's substantial evidence that the person has committed a felony, you have to do something about it. These are HUD rules. But we want to make sure we don't go overboard.
Okay, but you mentioned it.
No, I didn't mention it.
Okay, you mentioned it just now. And I hope that you're not saying that now, all of a sudden, because we're losing money, that we're going to send the police after people and make sure that we've got all the convicted felons or the potential convicted felons, and we're putting them all out in the street.
No, just the opposite.
Well,
a crime has to occur for this to be generated.
Well, I'm concerned about the statement in the context, and
then I was not presenting it properly. We don't go after people. If someone commits a felony, then they very well may forfeit the right to have a voucher.
But that's been the rule since the existence of the program.
But
so my question is, why the emphasis on it now, at this time, at this moment, when there's a potential reduction of funds?
Because there's 700. I have a huge waiting list of good people that want housing.
And I would respectfully suggest, okay,
go ahead.
If anybody wants to start abusing the process and convicting people or taking vouchers illegally, you'll lose all 1,800.
No. We'll not do it illegally.
Well, I'm concerned about the statement, and I trust that we're not going to be in a process where we're maliciously prosecuting folks.
Absolutely.
Because
not.
Of their voucher.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Are you done, Councilman Street?
Probably not, but go right ahead.
Well, you can take another few minutes. It's a short agenda today. There is a White House conference call regarding, was anyone from your shop invited or participated?
Was it today at 10:30?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Did you all participate?
Yes, we did, but they didn't specifically talk. Fray Lucia, who's our budget and procedures analyst, he participated, but he didn't get specifics on HUD. It was more just a general call, and he reported back to me because we were hoping we'd hear some stuff. But we actually did get direct HUD guidance on Friday, so mm-hmm. to us, at least with Section 8, we feel, you know, that we're able to, you know, to talk because it's actually coming from HUD saying you need to project this 5%. You need to start making this a reality because there are housing authorities all over the country that don't have a reserve, that right. haven't, you know, been able to plan for something like this. And it's the first time, as Alan said, that we're having our actual subsidies cut. It's a big, you know, it's a big chunk. People need to start planning for that worst case scenario happening now, unfortunately, you know, and with hopes that, you know, knock on wood, something should change between now and Friday.
Yeah. I commend you for the work that you've done over the years and having a clean record with all of these audits, and that we are able, because of the reserves, to sustain our tenants a lot longer than some of the other agencies that you're speaking of. But starting next year is going to be even more challenging because, as Alan said, once it's gone, it's gone. So we're going to be facing more of a crisis come next fiscal year than perhaps we are even today. So that's the real challenge, I think, going forward. Councilman Weiner.
Yes, thank you. I would like to echo the thoughts of Mr. Chairman on this issue, and just note for the record that I'm going to NACO on Friday and intend to attend the HUD briefing undersecretary on this issue. Their strength in numbers, and all our counties will be there, and we're all allied together on this issue. I know the Governor's Association is there this week, and the Council of Cities will be there the following week, so we have to keep letting Washington, D.C. know how we feel about this. Also, just wanted to get an idea, this is like guessing projection-wise going forward, how long can we sustain, factoring in the attrition rate, the good folks that are in the housing without having to possibly kick someone out onto the street?
I don't think we do. I don't think we have to worry about that.
Okay.
I think we, what we, as Kerry said, through attrition, we can probably keep everyone right there. Mm-hmm. That was our biggest fear, that people would lose their housing. And I think as long as we keep an eye on it and realize what we're doing, and it's the counting issue. You know, where are we budget-wise? People are there, we'll stay there. We have anything to do with it. My hope is we're really good on it. We can actually get some new people on the waiting list into the program. But it's going to really, as I said, it's going to take monthly eyes on that budget to see where we are. It's not like the old days where you had more money than you knew what to do with. There's real accountability now in a very difficult situation. And I'm sorry, we still don't know what's coming out. We still don't know where they are.
And the only thing I would say is the fact that it's just a new way of looking at it. We've always tried to maximize our utilization at 98% because we wanted, and now we really have to look at making sure we're hitting those benchmarks, but more with our budget authorization, which really hurts us because we want to maximize our utilization so we can house as many people as we can, because that's our mission and that's why we have the waiting list. We want to try to chip away at that waiting list. It's been closed since 2009. And secondly, there's a correlation between our utilization and how much admin money we get. So we want to keep our admin money. We want to make sure we're able to administer this program. And at full capacity, it's hard to do it with five vacancies. Our goal, and as we met this morning to talk about this, is that we do not take one person off that's already housed. But we're going to have to look at Section 8 differently. I mean, unfortunately, the way of the world, that our programs are being unfairly impacted by these types of cuts. And I think it'll continue to be that way. There's future, cuts that we're going to face. We have to look at it differently.
And I don't mean to editorialize, but ultimately, when there's budget cuts, it tends to be the population that gets hit the hardest. I mean, politically speaking, that's how they view it. This is, the easy, the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, which isn't right. But, there we are.
Councilman Tackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I mean, just in, some quick comments, but, truly, these are tough, challenging times, and the economic conditions facing, this county are magnified throughout the whole United States. And obviously, unfortunately, the harsh presentation that we have to receive from, Alan and Kerry are actually true fact of reality, unfortunately. And when they're in Washington and they're looking to cut and they're looking to spread their small little budget around too, they're going to be whacking at the programs, and they're all beneficial and they're all worthy, but they're going to look to cut somewhere. So I commend Kerry and Alan for obviously it's easy to manage when the lion's in charge and money is plentiful. It's just when the bear emerges, the true managers and the ability of the department to really manage emerges. And all the departments have cut and cut and cut. So, the ability that you're still at the point where you can sustain what you have right now is truly, amazing. And it's 100% credit to the
Kerry.
Team.
I mean, her shop does an amazing job. Some of the other things that we're hoping to do is possibly stretching our home funds and CDBG funds. I mean, we can get into more tax credit deals that are going on that are developing housing where we participate with other revenue streams. We can create housing and get more for our dollar than we're getting, direct. Only if we're the only entity going into the mix. So, there's creation of housing that serves population that, we're getting a bigger bang for our buck. Not uncommon in today's, market. Wilmington's been doing it for a while, and there are county projects, but there's a lot more going on out there that potentially could offer us more housing for low-income families.
Councilman Tackett?
I was only going to add real quickly, those are truly wise words and a lot of wisdom there, and there's a lot of back history. When the Biden administration was offering that $8,000 for that home buyers out there, the market boomed.
Yeah.
People took advantage of that, and it went crazy. And that was $8,000. And look what you could do potentially over there if you started to partner and started offering. And Kerry knows I've had numerous conversations with her about that, too. So.
Yeah, and that's our first-time homebuyers program that
even expanded. But I didn't keep it. He just said you buy a new home, you get
homes
eight.
That we realize, and we're talking to the state, that a lot of people haven't taken advantage of their home repair program. It's not the most favorable one out there, but it's out there. And we're talking to the state about, look, you have to modify this a little bit. It's an arduous task for someone who's low income to go through the process to get their home fixed. And there's a large source of revenue out there that if you can tweak it where it's a little more user-friendly, we can apply those funds to the residents of Newcastle County and keep people in their homes. This is money that supplements our waiting list. So those are conversations that are going on now.
So you feel that you're pretty much prepared as it relates to other CDBG programs, home, ESG, and those?
I feel we're as prepared can be given the unknowns that are facing us right now. I'm not making this up. We took a stab at what it might be, and we really don't know what it's going to be.
I just had one follow-up.
Go right ahead.
Alan, the municipalities that we provide the federal dollars for, as far as the oversight and we administer into there, do we look to them, because they are governments and they do have infrastructure, I mean, they have employees, everything else, do we look to them to supply anybody to help employee-wise for your offices? I mean, you said you got five vacancies, but if we're, you know, whatever, if we're providing CBD.
If we go into a tax credit deal, let me give you a scenario. I do 100 units in Newark. The tax credits go through, someone who, buys the credits. They have a whole company set up that handles the asset management, so we don't have to deal with that, going out and looking at it and to make sure they're in compliance. The state of Delaware is going to go out and do the inspection. So all of that is now off our plate. We know that this project's being looked at by at least two, maybe three other entities. So that takes a load off of us. And meanwhile, it's usually 100% affordable. So those units are now in Newcastle County. They're being inspected by at least two other organizations, reputable organizations. Not if it's within the city of Newark, let's say, they're going to be looking at it also. So to answer your question, yeah, there is a possibility that takes some of the heat off of us.
Councilman Street?
I would just urge you, it's up to you guys to decide, but I would urge you not use what the city of Wilmington did in the previous administration in the Department of Real Estate and Housing as a model for what you do with CDBG money. Because they eliminated funding for all programs other than houses, and in my view, with foundation, part of the problem that we're having on the street right now, they helped create by taking away services that were very badly needed and weren't replaced anywhere else.
Is that where they were just dumping all the money into the housing project and took it all away?
Yeah, they're still doing that.
Are they? No, we aren't going to do that.
I don't think that it has not been for all these years the position of county government to move in that direction, because you were starving people at the other end by not providing other services and you're putting all your...
Just the opposite. We need the services.
Bricks and
water.
I mean,
what's good the housing without services?
I'm just going based on what you said.
You could take a portion of it to make that happen. We still need to provide the services. It's not a case of either or. It's a case of this and that. That we need the services. And I'm familiar with what the city did. It was kind of easy. Personally, it was kind of an easy way out. They could just dump it in there, and then they didn't have to worry about anything. It was a labor-intense industry. And if anything, we're going to probably try to expand our services. We're looking for even more.
Any further comments on the federal grant proposal process review? Any further comments from you, Alan, regarding this issue? Carrie?
Oh, no. Thank you.
Yeah, do you want to
Councilman
go ahead?
Cartier?
Yeah.
I know that the figure that I have in my head is that Newcastle County has about, and correct me if I'm wrong, about $1.7 million in salary overhead paid for by federal money. That's about right. I mean, in this scenario coming forward, I mean, do you project any departmental layoffs potentially, or
unfunded positions, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
Unfunded position. The vacant positions that are funded but not filled. That's what we would look at those first. So we wouldn't hit people if we didn't have to. We just don't increase the staff.
Right.
Do you have a lot of those in your budget?
Do you have a comment?
We have
a lot
five
of vacant
in
funded positions.
We have five Section 8 vacancies of the 13 staff that we have in Section 8, which we haven't filled for years because we've been going through this. I mean, if we touched about the half, but our admin dollars, they want to prorate at 69%. So forever, we've never been that low. I mean, we're at 80 now, so we're going to hit. But we know we can sustain it. We just won't be able to do. We'll have to pretty much use everything but salary and benefits for the rest of the year. In terms of our Section 8 salary line. But again, we've already, you know, without funding those, without getting those positions, with unfunding those vacancies, we should be okay.
And if I could just add, I mean, it's easy to say, you know, we can do it and we don't have to fund those positions, but what we're not saying is you have a few people there handling this whole thing. And this is not an easy job. I mean, they're on the phone all day long dealing with nothing but, you know, problems and situations they're trying to resolve on both ends, with the tenants and with the federal government. So I don't want to minimize what these individuals are doing. This is a very difficult, stressful job that they're performing. And I think it's only fair that, you know, credit go to them that they're able to pick up the slack and sustain this program.
Councilman Street?
All right. Five unfunded positions. And you started with a figure of $1 million. So if the five unfunded positions remain unfunded, basically it gives you the ability to maintain what you have for what period of time? We're talking about 6 months, a year? What's the cutoff when the elimination of the five positions, now something else has to be cut of significance?
Go ahead. Alan mentioned the HAP budget is going to be reduced by $1 million, and that's the first time we've ever experienced that. The admin budget, which we went to council back in November, we actually put funding in for those five vacant positions, and I think our total budget was about 1.3. With these cuts, we're looking at getting revenue from HUD of about $1,050,000, so it's about $260,000 loss. If we take out those five vacant positions, those funds, we should be able to meet our budget adequately. So, you know, HUD funds us on these two separate streams, and we anticipate being able to stay at that $1 million staffing with our current staff, and, you know, and salary and benefits, and not have to do, you know, any moving around of staff to you know, be able to cover them through our Section 8 program. We also have some reserves in our administrative. We have two reserve, so in the event that something unexpected should happen, we have sort of, you know, forecasted for a rainy day if we had to, but we feel like we're due to the fact we just haven't funded those positions, we should be able to make our budget without doing anything, you know, short term or long term with those positions. Does that help? I'm sorry.
So we're getting hit both ways, programmatically and administratively. And, you know, honestly, to answer Councilman Street's question, if they hit us again, I don't know, at that point, we're past bare bones.
We never expected you to meet it.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. I mean, I wish it was better.
Not true.
I wish it was better.
And
are we Councilman Street?
I sat over here and whispered, sure, it's not your fault. I'm going to say that loud. It's not your fault. And I want to acquiesce the comments from Chairman Hollins and Councilman Wine in terms of your hard work and your leadership, you know, because, you know, there's been continuity with your leadership over several administrations. So thank you very much.
I'll echo that. It's an extremely well-run program, as I've seen it do. So they're very efficient. They're very, very professional in what they do.
Well, I think there's enough evidence to prove that when all of the special funding came into community services through NSP and other special revenue streams during this economic crisis, and we were able to maintain the level of performance to the extent that other agencies in the state of Delaware who could not put the money on the street, the money ended up coming to Newcastle County because we had demonstrated the ability to put the money on the street where it's needed to help people. So I think the work in Newcastle County has been stellar compared to any other jurisdiction in the state of Delaware, at least. We put all of the money on the street.
And they continue to do so.
With the limited amount of personnel that they had.
The carrier staff managed to get the state's money out where the state couldn't do it.
Right.
Which is a tribute to the staff. It's you know, it's amazing. Which we're coming at the other end. Look, if you can't get your money out, give it to us. We'll get it out for you.
Right.
So those are actually conversations that are ongoing right now. Don't hesitate to call us. We'll be happy to get your money out on the street.
If there's no further comment on this agenda item related to the federal grant proposal process review, without any objection, we'll move to the other agenda item, which is an update on the Claymont Library project.
We're still on budget. Actually, possibly a little bit. We might even have some savings, Councilman. We might be able to put those walks in and stock the library with more books than we anticipated. And we're looking completion end of the year. So it's moving forward. If anyone wants a more detailed look at what's going on, we've instituted a completion to date on each item and then where they are as what was proposed in contract, so we can break it down item by item as to the progress we're making Claymont. So it's a positive report. We're moving forward. We've contacted the owner of the road, that one segment, and told them basically let us know when you're going to improve it. We're not doing it. And that's the one piece owned by the developer of the housing right next to it. So it's on their plate right now. We're awaiting their response. Like I said, it frees up some money for us that we can put elsewhere. But we have the road necessary to open the library. We don't need that section. It's aesthetic. It'd look nice if it went all the way around. But we're tossing that back to them. Let them do it. We'll be happy to show them our plan so there's continuity in the road.
Comment, questions from members of the council. Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. A couple of, by way of updates. Earlier in the year, we had the final placement of the steel on the building. We had a nice ceremony for that, and all the different people in the community, the Friends of Claymont Library, and the county executive was there. And Alan, were you there? You were there too, and myself and. The Friends of Claymont Library presented a $470,000 check to the county as part of their $750,000 MOU owed amount for fundraising. So that's moving along very nicely. And I got to say, now the building is out of the ground and we get a sense of the full elevation of the building. The site, you know, characteristics are extremely dramatic and really attractive. It's sort of a thing where people see the building. You know, it's a reality, and a lot of people in the Claymont vicinity are very excited about this, and I just always want to recognize, you know, that the County Council voted these funds, and we sincerely appreciate the funding for this library, which is going to be a keystone for the community renewal process in Claymont to have this state-of-the-art community library. And I got to say, County Executive, it's the first time I think he actually looked at, you know, elevations on a plan with the, you know, colorized pictures, and he remarked that it was quite an attractive library, and he was concerned that it was going to look like Kirkwood Highway, but it doesn't, and it's brick and it's more traditional, and so everybody was happy with that. So
I'm sorry you had to mention Kirkwood Highway.
We're doing sorry, fine. Tim.
That'll never die. Yeah.
Councilman Weiner.
Thank you.
Picking on me.
As one of the four individuals around this table that represents Branding 100, I'd just like to comment that this part of this visioning process that took place 14 years ago, we talked about Alfred I. DuPont and his vision for the boulevard that approaches Alfred I. DuPont High School, where my mother and family went. And it's that same vision that was used as a model for the community. When you drive down Green Street and then it widens to a boulevard, you'll see the library that will have that same impressive feel that anchors the end of Green Street like Alfred Idapon High School does. And I think it's a great legacy for all of this council to have.
Very good. Any other comment, question, members of council? Any comment or questions from anyone in the public? Then we'll move on to, were you done with this particular item, Alan?
No, good.
You good?
Yeah.
Then we'll move to the next agenda item, which is the Newcastle County Summer Camp Registration and Financial Aid Application Packets, I guess, are ready to be presented.
Yeah, we'd just like to pass those out. It's a little bit new to me.
There we go.
Yay.
The big question around this is the funding, and how much funding do we have? And can you say at this point, or is it still?
Not at this point, but this is, like I said, I'm just getting into this now. Dane was handling this out of my office, and if you have any questions, contact me. I'll get an answer. If you need any more applications, let me know, and we'll get them to you. Locations are Ridge Elementary, Delcastle, Garfield, Cedar Lane, Tally Day, and Claymont. Registrations begin on March 1st. Financial aid is available at all locations. It's based on the needs of the family. I would confess, I'm not a thorough knowledge of this, but if you do have questions, like I said, I will get the answers to you immediately within that day.
You did say that financial aid is available at all of the locations?
Yes.
Okay.
All locations. There will also be food available at most camp locations this year. And
Councilman Taggart?
Are these also available online?
Online registration, yes. But if you need more, just let me know. I'll bring them down.
Okay. We can direct them. That's fine.
Yes.
And also, I know it's a separate issue, but still part of the component. Do we know how many summer youth we might be able to employ this year, and when that process may start?
I do not know that answer yet, but okay. I will get it for you.
Okay.
Councilman Weiner?
Yes. I understand insurance and liability issues. I preface that remark with my next question. If retirees or folks want to volunteer time to help, is that something that
imagine they let us know that they would be under the umbrella of the liability. I'll check with our new risk manager.
Yes.
But I would think they would. But okay. I'll find out.
Great. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Maybe you could email all of council on that. I think I could think of a number of retirees that would love to volunteer time.
Love
and
to
they have
them.
Skill sets that would be helpful.
No. We'd love to have them.
Keep them busy.
House President Bullock.
Alan, how many kids did we employ last year?
You know what, Councilman? I don't know. But I'll get you the answer.
Okay.
130. I think it's about 130. 130. Has it all rolled out by the end?
By the time we dealt with the summer youth program and the registration program, sort of two different things.
Yeah.
But with the volunteers working with youth, what about background checks and those types of things?
Oh yeah, we have to.
Okay.
Yeah, it's law. You have to make sure everyone has to go through a check.
Okay.
When you're dealing with you.
Further comment on the Newcastle County Summer Camp Registration Financial Aid Application Packet, Councilman Wyman?
Yeah, quick question. Where online will this, is this information, or will it be available?
On our website.
It'll be on the Department of It'll be on the Department of Community Services website.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we can send the link. When we send the information.
Yes. Thank you.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick, I'm sorry.
That's right. The employment. Did we get packets last year? And will we get them again this year, or is that just all online?
I think this is the summer camp information.
Right.
The summer employment program is served, if I remember correctly, that happens around April, May. We'll get all of that information. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's when we apply to EOLs around that time, and then we sort of get,
thank you.
And that'll be a whole separate presentation. Yeah.
Thanks.
At least one of us was asking for applications as early as yesterday. So.
Yeah.
Patience, my son.
Oh, I'm not, at the wrong end of the table.
Not one of my virtues, Mr. Chairman.
Any further comment on the Newcastle County Summer Camp registration? Seeing none, any comment from the public? Anything under other? Is there a motion?
Motion adjourned.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.